This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandergrift.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. In recent weeks, we've been seeing the use of drones by various government agencies for science and disaster relief. Last month, NOAA scientists shared video of how they were able to help a whale entangled in discarded fishing nets. The use of drones is growing, but so are concerns about privacy. Neighborhood watch groups are starting to see posts from worried members.
Joining us in our studio today are Ted Ralston, aerospace expert who is the program director of the University of Hawaii's Unmanned Aerial Systems Center, Micah Motis of Kolea Gold, a company that provides drone educational programs and commercial aerial photography. And joining us by phone from California is Ian Greger, communications manager for the Federal Aviation Administration's Pacific Division. He's with us on the phone. Welcome to you all. We're talking about the state of drone use here in Hawaii. And we're going to start with Ian Greger, who can only join us for the first few minutes of the show. Ian, can you set the stage on federal regulations?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me today. It's a pleasure to be on. You know, the bottom line is that there are two classes of civilian drone operators. One is model aircraft operators, or hobbyists, as they're commonly known. And the other is the people who is basically everybody else. And there are some differences in the rules that apply to those two categories, but there are a lot of similarities too. And to try to get past some of the confusion about what you can do as a hobbyist and what you can do if you're a non-hobbyist, I'd like to stress the similarities for a minute. Just talk a little bit about the similarities. And the fact is that the top priority of pilots, whether they're hobbyists or commercial operators or anyone else, is to fly safely. And the bottom line is that whether you're a model aircraft pilot or a commercial drone pilot, you have to operate safely and not fly in a way that poses a danger to manned aircraft. And it's imperative that all drone operators must get authorization to fly in controlled airspace. And there's a wealth of information available on the FAA's drone website. That's www.faa.gov/UAS, and I would encourage everybody to visit that.
UAS being Unmanned Aerial Systems, yeah?
Unmanned Aircraft Systems, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Ian, what can you share with us? Because I know that we've a number of government agencies that have drones and would like to use them, and they're concerned about getting certification for their people to be able to do this responsibly and do it the right way.
Well, you know, in the past, government organizations, public agencies had to go through a fairly laborious process to be able to operate a drone. They had to get something called a certificate of authorization, and that could take quite a while. But a couple of years ago, we adopted a new rule. We call it our small UAS rule, or Part 107, which refers to the code of the federal regulations that cover the rule. And with the small UAS rule, what you have to do is take a course, pass a test, and get a drone pilot license. And once you have a drone pilot license and you're flying a properly registered aircraft, an aircraft that's registered with the FAA, you don't need any further authorization to fly from the FAA, provided you operate within the parameters of the rule. And if there's any parameter, if there's any provision of the rule that you would like to get a waiver to, you can apply for a waiver, such as, you know, nighttime operations or operating beyond the pilot's visual line of sight, et cetera, et cetera. So I think what we're seeing is a lot more public agencies, whether it's fire departments or, you know, federal agencies or law enforcement agencies, are opting to fly under the small UAS rule rather than go through the rather laborious certificate of authorization process.
Okay, because I know we're seeing a number of agencies, the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency, they don't have a drone, and I think they're relying on, the university and the USGS mm-hmm. folks on the Big Island with all the volcano action
Certainly.
Over there. And then we also have, you know, the city folks that are hoping mm-hmm. to use it for the Honolulu civil defense for the emergency
yep.
operations, but they don't have a drone.
Yep.
They have a drone, but they don't have anyone certified.
Yeah, I think you bring up an important point, is that any public agency can contract with an individual who's properly certificated to fly a drone. So, you know, as long as you have an individual who's licensed and is flying a registered drone, then that public agency could contract with that person to perform services for it.
And if they break the rules, they could have that license yanked, or there could be penalties.
Yeah, if you violate the regulations, the FAA can take enforcement action against anybody. But we prefer to educate people about the rules first, and take enforcement action only when there's a willful violation or a really egregious violation, or a repeat violation, something like that.
But there's a potential here for a fair amount of confusion as drones proliferate in areas where aircraft are trying to fly, right? I mean, there's a very real danger to breaking these, to violating these regs, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it's the important thing is for people, whether you're a hobbyist, whether you're a commercial operator, to be informed about what safety entails. And the good thing is that when a commercial operator goes and gets a drone pilot license, they have to take a course. They have to understand airspace rules and regulations. With hobbyists, because hobbyists also have to register their aircraft, they get exposed to an educational message that is a component of the registration process. But really, the key is education. And when it comes to, there, as you said, there certainly is a huge proliferation of drones over the last few years. And, we believe that most people who are starting to fly care about safety. But the reality is a lot of the people who are starting to fly drones now, especially hobbyists, have no previous aviation experience. So it could be that, they care about safety, but they just might not understand what safe operations entail, which is why it's incredibly important for people to go through the registration process, which is very simple, very quick, can be done online, and it has an important educational component to it.
Ian, once you're flying a drone and you've achieved this, the proper certification, how controllable is a typical drone aircraft? In other words, can you guarantee that it's going to stay within an area if a brisk wind comes up, or, is there a chance of just defects in manufacture or operation where you would lose control of a drone that you had sent up?
If you look at some of the videos that are online, it's obvious that drones are very controllable, provided the pilot has the requisite skill. And it's part of aviation, whether you're flying a manned aircraft or a drone, to be aware of the conditions you're flying in. And certain people won't go up in their Cessna 152 if the wind conditions are too strong, and those same thoughts should apply to anybody flying a drone.
Well, when you drive on the highway, you're frequently struck by the fact that not every motorist is as well versed in how to drive a car as they might be, and of course, aviation obeys a far higher standard, but you have a lot of amateurs flying these things, don't you? Can we be guaranteed they're going to know what the rules are and know how to operate this aircraft?
Well, we have that's a very good point. And the fact is that beyond the registration process, we do have a comprehensive program in place to educate drone pilots about the importance of flying safely. And that includes educational partnerships with drone organizations, the drone industry, airports, pilot groups, and other stakeholders. And, while the registration process is incredibly important, there are also a number of apps out there, including one that the FAA developed called Before You Fly, that lets drone pilots know whether it's safe to fly in their current or planned future location. But, safety is really a partnership. Safety isn't just the FAA. It isn't just the drone industry. It isn't just drone organizations. It's everybody working together to get the word out to as wide an audience as possible. And frankly, programs such as yours are an enormous benefit in that effort.
And Ian, do you know, are these drone schools that certify people? I mean, is there like a big wait list?
I don't know. The fact is, you don't need to attend a school to get certificated. You can do it online, I believe. I think the process, the exact amount of time it takes to get certificated escapes me right now, but I think it's a fairly quick process.
Okay. But
the course information is available on the FAA website, and after you study, you do need to go to a testing center, I believe, to take your test. But we found that of the tens of thousands of people who have taken a drone pilot license exam, I think about 90% have passed on their first try.
Well, if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about drones and their place in our lives. We have got Ian Gregor on the line from the FAA, and we'd like to know your story. If you have an experience with a drone, you can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands.
Ian Gregor is the communications manager for the FAA's Pacific Division, and Ian, I know you're pressed for time, so thanks very much for joining us. We needed to sort of set the stage about what the rules are and what they aren't. Thanks very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet. Our guests in the studio are Ted Ralston, Program Director of the University of Hawaii's Unmanned Aerial Systems Center, and Mike Amotis of Kolea Gold, a company that provides drone educational programs as well as commercial aerial photography. Welcome, gentlemen.
Aloha. Thanks very much for having us.
Sure. This is kind of looking like a pretty unregulated environment as it currently exists. Is that a fair characterization?
It's probably fair to say it's hard to understand where the regulations are, where they end, and what the gray areas are between clear and obvious and unclear areas are, and also very hard to get all the information in one spot. What Ian was talking about was basically the FAA side of the equation, which
right.
is flight safety, air safety. There's land ownership issues, there's trespass issues, there's privacy and personal rights that have to be guaranteed, and there's actually professional aspects that come into the picture here as well. So getting the whole picture on what allows you really to operate in not only in safety but in compliance with other requirements, there is no central website. We're going to hopefully have our website at the Applied Research Lab provide that information, but it doesn't right now.
And I know my experience, I've seen drone operators at Kapi'olani Park on the weekends trying to figure out how to make this thing work. And I'm thinking, I don't think you're allowed over here. You know, I mean, I know we have that one area for remote control airplanes over at Kapa'akori Gulch, but I don't really know on the Neighbor Islands where these things are okay and where they're not okay.
Yeah, and that's one of the ambiguous situations. The one in Kapa'akori Road, the Kawainui Model Airfield, is designed for that purpose. It's an AMA-sanctioned field that has all the right credentials. It's got an agreement with Kaneohe Base, the Marine Base, in terms of airspace, so it's all set up properly. The other parks, at least on Oahu, have certain of them are enabled and allow model airplanes to be flown, and most of them don't. Alamana Park, for example, Kapi'olani Park, by the rules, are not permitted. And that then leads to some of the ambiguity. Well, is a UAV or a drone a model airplane, or is it something else? And those rules haven't been clarified yet. And as a result, the people who are in charge of enforcing don't really have a clear picture that they can take forward. And so how do we educate the public when we have a relatively ambiguous set of circumstances?
Micah, your company provides drone education as well as does commercial aerial photography, and I would imagine that in getting Kolea Gold off the ground, so to speak, you had to deal with a lot of regulation and had to understand a lot of regulation. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, really why we started our company is because being born and raised here in Hawaii, we were told growing up, 4 years ago we started our company, and my mentor, who teaches entrepreneurs how to start their company, she told me, you know, Hawaiians, I believe that you guys are the ones who are going to change the world. And so with that belief, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to take this drone and I'm going to put it to the test. I'm going to learn everything about this drone and what we can do with this drone. Rules, regulations, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got my business partner, Kainoa Jimenez, and I told him, hey, what do we do with this? how can we master this? And he said, let's open it up. Let's find out what's inside. And this is a DJI product, a very popular aircraft that is flown here in Hawaii and through the world. And so we had to humble ourselves. We found out about the rules and regulations, how to obtain your exemption 333, and we did it. We went through the whole.
What is that exemption, Micah?
That was before the Part 107. It was like you had to get this form in order for you to do more commercial. If you want to take your,
I see.
Yeah, if you want to do hobbyist work, you can fly recreational, go to the parks that allow you to fly. But if you want to make money off of it, doing a commercial, you have to get this exemption 333. You have to be a manned air pilot. And so we went through the nine yards. I enrolled myself into the Wright Flight School.
So you have to know how to fly a plane.
You have to know how to get into a Cessna 172 and come down. And it was quite a interesting challenge. And we was like, because we believe that we can master this and we can change the world, let's do it. And so I got involved. I'm halfway to finishing. I'm still continuing, and it's not easy. And then, of course, FAA announced about the Part 107. And so the Part 107, no, we didn't take any course. We just went in and understood this test is similar to the private pilot test. Mm-hmm. It's real similar, but it almost looked like it just changed it into putting unmanned aircraft vehicle instead of a manned pilot. And you have to understand, you have to have that attitude, that good attitude as a pilot, understanding the rules and regulations. And sure enough, we went in and we got our Part 107 certification. And then we're like, okay, now we can take it to the sky. We can take our drone, register our drone. And what we realize is that a lot of us here in Hawaii is still learning. And we know from our background, you know, in Hawaii, look at the Iolani Palace, for example. Look at how much technology was in there in the 18th century.
The first one to turn the lights on,
exactly.
Right?
We had electricity. We had light bulbs. We had all telephones, you know, finding out, down at the harbor is who's coming in. And so with that passion that we have with technology, we wanted to make sure we guide it with the right people at the right place at the right time. And definitely now we're looking into where we're leading to as a drone company here in Hawaii. Now we're getting into ISO 9001. That's, you know, now we're looking into setting the standard for not only in Hawaii, but through the world of how to help and how to get people going into that direction of safe operations. And education is super important. We started off with Hawaiian Immersion School, starting to teach. We're teaching how to fly drones, Makaulelo Hawaii. You're learning how to fly a drone. Then these two pilots that we had, they're so inspired, and now we're responsible for their lives. And Kolea Gold, Kolea is that bird, right, that flies around, goes back and forth from Alaska, and it represents air navigation, and that's what we are. And the gold is part of Marino School. I'm an alumni of Marino, and both my partner and I, and we are very proud to be Spartans, and that's where the maroon and gold comes from. So Kolea Gold, it was important. Now we have a summer program to educate our students how the rules and regulations, just like participating with UH at their drone boot camp. It's our responsibility as pilots to get into the community and show everyone that we are responsible, we're safe, and we need to make sure that our recreational pilots understand this, because if they don't, they go out and say, hey, you mind taking a picture of the lava? And then it can lead into a lot of rules and regulations. And we heard it from Ian that education is important, but however, at the end of the day, bottom line, they will regulate, and we need to honor that. And as a resident, as a Hawaiian, with a small company, we pushing very hard on that.
Micah, we've got a pilot on the line, and before we pick that up, though, we want to invite listeners to Join us by calling at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689. And Bob from Capolet is a drone pilot. Bob?
Hello. How are you?
All right. You've heard a little bit of the discussion. What's your perspective?
Well, as a hobbyist pilot, I know that there are a couple of misconceptions that people have about drones right off the bat. I know there are people that think that those of us that are flying drones are peeking in their window, and you know, you need to realize that most of those cameras are no different than the cell phone camera. Same processor, same lens, no big zoom lens. If it was looking in your window, it would be banging against your window. Most of us are looking for the long view and the beautiful view. But also, these devices are very technical. They're programmed in such a way as if you're flying a DJI product, it will not allow you to fly. They're constantly pushing out firmware updates that will not allow you to fly in a closed airspace. They tell you when you're in restricted airspace. And most of us, we do not want to be regulated out of existence. We've made a significant investment into the products that we have. We enjoy the time that we spend flying them. And I believe that we take the same care that a commercial pilot does in respecting the airspace, respecting the people and the AINA, and making sure that we're not doing what we're not supposed to be doing. It's fun to fly. You get to do some amazing stuff with a drone, and I would hate to lose the privilege. So I hope that myself and other pilots would respect those rules. They're very easy to discover, and you almost have to willfully break the rules. If you're going to break the rules, you have to try, because it's almost impossible to not know the way that these things are designed today.
Well, thanks for that, Bob. Ted Ralston is the program director of the University of Hawaii's Unmanned Aerial Systems Center. You were describing the regulatory environment with a Swiss cheese analogy, which I'd like to ask you to return to.
And I appreciate the comments that Bob made, and I think just echoing what Bob said and what Micah said, standards are starting to emerge in this game through professional organizations and Department of Commerce and such, and so we're going to see sort of a industry consensus style of management in terms of regulations, and they are going to be along the lines Bob's suggesting. Minimal restrictions and minimal regulations, as long as the manufacturers and the operators all behave accordingly. So we'll see that coming forward. It's already happening. ASTM, DCA, and such are beginning to push forward. And if there's anybody who wants to join the standards organizations, they're always welcome to have new people join. You don't have to be a technical expert. You can be an opinion generator of how standards should be applied. So I think it's all heading in the right direction. As far as the regulatory framework is concerned, it is still what it is, but there's even change coming in that. The FAA Reauthorization Act that's going through Congress now has in it a requirement that the FAA, in the next 2 or 3 years, figure out how it's possible for local jurisdictions to control their own destiny with regard to unmanned air systems usage. This is the airspace below 400 feet. So rather than have the competing and overlapping sets of rules coming from various different sources, there'll be, if this is successful, a jurisdictional approach that will apply in our jurisdiction here, which is probably different than what we might find elsewhere. But if the jurisdictions can come together professionally and maturely and figure out how to make this thing work in various areas, that is what the FAA is going to be challenged to go out and make happen. We can lead the way here again along the lines Mike has been talking about. So standards and responsible local operation can be the guide to the future.
And you had mentioned that we had the recent lantern floating ceremony at Ala Moana Beach Park, and you were doing some counter-tracking of who had drones up in the air, because safety is the big issue.
Yeah, well, that's another good example. That particular park does not permit drone operations, and the organizers who conduct the event have a permit to use the park, and that permit specifically disallows drones for that event. So not only does the park not allow it, the event doesn't allow it. So therefore, you have to go out and cautiously let people who are using drones be aware of that if they aren't otherwise aware of it. Plus, they're operating at night, which is a violation unless they have a waiver for night operations. Operating over people, another issue that has to be addressed. And there are, and most of them don't have registrations. So there's a number of faults that can occur if you're not informed. The question I think that we're all facing, and Micah is the major proponent of this, how do we get the information out there through the school systems, through the teachers and the principals, and the kids can educate their parents and their siblings. If we can get that information spread, then we won't have these issues because everybody will understand what the basic fundamental issue, basic fundamental laws of respect are, and then the regulations make sense in that regard.
How many did you find? How many drones did you find?
I'm guessing there were about maybe 12
really?
Operators operating
at the lantern ceremony.
I was able to talk to about 8 of them, and I said, hey, by the way, do you realize these issues? And they said, no, we didn't. I said, where do you get this from? I said, oh, that's the problem. There is no place to get the information from in a quick way, which is what we're going to go fix.
And maybe at this point I can mention this. We just got this email to us from our friends on the Big Island, the Department of Geography and Environmental Sciences, the department there. They offer a UAV-UAS in-person course in conjunction with SDAV Labs. And I'm not sure what all this stands for, but it's I think it's a certificate program that they offer at UH Hilo. And they are authorized, I believe, to put up a drone in conjunction with the activities around the Kilauea eruption and, you know, monitoring what's happening there with that science. But another resource for folks to go to.
Well, Ted, what you just described at the lantern floating ceremony is essentially a dozen people who don't know what they're doing putting unmanned aircraft up in the air over a public event. There's a lot of risk involved in that.
I think the issue there is the high-profile people who come to the event, the folks from the leading organizations from Japan come. Those are very high-profile people, so there's always the concern of injury and that sort of thing associated with that. Plus, it's in that particular event, it's basically a funeral ceremony for 7,000 people, and probably I won't have a drone at my funeral, and I doubt that any of us will, and so that's you know, how that works. So there's a respect of the drone, of the event organizers that we need to, you can't regulate behavior. So it's hard to put a law out that says respect the event manager, but that they don't want that issue. That's from a safety perspective and from a respect perspective. So that's where it starts.
And I know in my neighborhood, I've been seeing emails go through on the Neighborhood Watch, people concerned about seeing drones in the neighborhood, and they're not sure who's putting them up, if it's someone trying to break in their home and do surveillance. And so there is a concern about, you know, the privacy issues as well. And you talked about the enforcement, and you were talking that on the ground, this is a trespass thing, and they should, what, call police if they're concerned?
At this point in time, that's about all you can do, and the only way you get a hold of the police is call 911. So just call them and say you've got a concern. But by the time the police arrive, the guy's packed up and gone, so it's a very unlikely circumstance that can be resolved. The best thing is just try to find a person and say, by the way, what you're doing is I consider a threat to me. Please don't do it here, and see if you can get a social response. But once again, if we're successful in Micah's educational program, everybody will understand that there are behaviors that are acceptable and those that aren't, and if we can get the kids to understand it, the kids understand things quick and with great facility quite easily. So we can start pushing this thing up from the elementary level.
Micah, talk about that, because you've just had an event at Kapolei
Middle School. Yes, absolutely. And I just want to point out to Bob, thank you for calling in, and thank you for your respect on the aina. What I want to share is that through this whole time of learning, we had to have created a value in our company of ethics, you know, having good ethics. And so when it came to Kapolei Middle School, we understood that this school is located, you know, not too far from Kalailoa Airport. And so now we're within a 5-mile radius of the airport. And so, you know, by rule, you need to contact the local FAA, contact tower, and let them know, hey, we have operations going on. And that's what we exactly did.
Do most people know that?
No.
Well, it is. I mean, Well, you're talking about education. You know, we have driver.
Yes.
We have driver ed. We have all kinds of safety education about people on the highway.
So,
and people are still paying into each other.
Provide the droner ed. Yeah.
Yeah.
it's that idea about educating our community, especially our students who are so eager to learn more about technology, and we're showing them, okay, in order to get any operations off the ground here at Kapolei Middle, we must contact Kapolei Middle, Kalailoa Airport, letting them know. And what happened there in this particular, just following procedures, things that Part 107 pilots, commercial pilots understand, is once you do that, you create a relationship. And that's what we care about. You know, always go back to our why. As Kanaka Maoli, we got to take care of our relationships. We contact Tower. And we invited them. You know what? We're having a presentation here at Kapolei Middle for UAV operations. You guys are more than welcome to come. And they're like, oh, thank you. You know, sorry, we cannot be there right now. But the fact that we're creating this relationship of understanding, okay, as a pilot, we don't want to have you feel like, oh, man, I don't even want to take off anymore. I just feel, no, we want to give you the confidence and be confident in operating safely, you know, and understanding your environment, understanding your... So it was a windy day. So, of course, we was like, you know what, we need to make that decision of not operating in the air because of safety reasons with our students, with our OPO.
But really, you see, hitchhike on what Mike is saying, what he's created is a connection line between the tower at Kapolei, which is John Rogers Field, and the local community through the school. That is an incredible communications path that the FAA can now use anytime that they want. Get a hold of Micah. He'll get it to the schools. So information, concerns, observations that the tower has can come forward directly to the community. And that community is under the downwind for the airport, so it's a very important community for that airport to think about. But that actually could be expanded to other airports. In fact, FAA here has asked that sort of connection occur in the other airport areas as well. Start with the schools that are in the airport areas and move it out from there. But this is a great taking care of your responsibilities orientation. And I just hats off to Micah for having put that together. And who would have ever thought this will generate a pipeline?
Right.
But it also brings up another point. This is the tower, which is called part of air traffic management. And they're kind of a unique operation. They have to make things work. So they have very much a problem-solving orientation. We also have HCF, which is the basic Honolulu Control Facility, manages the air traffic for the entire state. They think in the same way. We have the standards people who think about the rules and the regulations and the tests that we're going to take. We have the maintenance. There's so many different departments in the FAA, and many of them don't deal with the actual operations as does what Mike is conducted. So he's got the connection where it really matters, the operating element of the FAA directly to the community. And that is a incredible credit and a value we can build upon.
So you talk about ethics, which is a good thing because you're not out to disrupt. You're trying to follow the rules and put safety first.
Yes.
We just got an email from someone who's concerned about getting hit by a drone. Mm. This person writes, have noticed small, very fast, and very quiet drone flying within 8 inches along windows of bedrooms where I live. Was very startled when it flew close to my head while I was putting stuff in the washing machine. You know, and so you've got people like that are just flying willy-nilly and could really hurt somebody.
There's in this state, the idea is that the appreciation of threat is in the eyes of a threatened person. So if a person feels threatened, then they really need to get a hold of authorities quickly and talk to their city councilmen, talk to the legislators who manage their area, and start getting that information out there. But the consideration of threat is in your mind. And that's the way it works. So this person has a right to get a hold of somebody.
We have a professional drone operator on the line, George from Kaimuki.
Aloha, gentlemen. Ted has always been there for us. When I started my company, High Vantage, HI Vantage, some 3 years ago. Aloha, Ted.
Hey, George.
And Micah, you're definitely a guy I I would love to meet you and just help you any way you know we can. We all have to hui together. I have other ethical drone competitors that are friends, but we all hui together and make sure that we keep the ethics going and the safe operational usage of these aerial systems that are quite magic. Literally, when you're up there, you're soaring like a bird, and you're seeing a different. You're offering your clients a completely different, impactful, dramatic, and beautiful view of our Haina.
George, I mean, did you have to deal with a lot of regulation and insurance challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. And I my company, I have a $3 million aerial liability policy. The state requires for filmmaking a $1 million policy. But, you know, we pride ourselves in being absolutely safe first and foremost, and I've even refused shots that clients, producers have requested us to do because it's either within the 5-mile radius and I don't have the proper waiver. But sometimes in dealing with, you know, they often think that, oh, but you're flying over private property, so the FAA rules don't apply. No, absolutely not. FAA rules have jurisdiction over the entire U.S. airspace, including Hawaii. You know, we're no exception. You can't fly over, you know, technically you can fly over somebody's property, but again, the ethics is extremely important to us. We wouldn't do anything to jeopardize safety. But not only that, we don't want to be a hindrance. We don't want to be a nuisance.
Well, George, in your experience, have you run across people who aren't as scrupulous?
On the job, you know, we show up at a site. I have my cones out. We have a bright orange landing pad. We make ourselves known that we're the drone operators. We don't hide. You know, unless we're going to be in the shot, you know, we take measures where we're not seen, but we have the permits with us. And I've approached other people when we would have licensed at certain sports events. We can't even fly over the contestants or participants. Again, I don't have that waiver. So we take pains to fly maybe over the ocean or a remote area where we could still shoot the event, but other hobbyists fly directly over, you know, participants, and I've come up to them, and you know, they're usually a parent with a young child, and you know, our mission is to educate, but you know, again, if they're being belligerent and dangerous, then yeah, you could call the authorities.
So you have seen some of that. You've seen some abuses.
Yes, but not in the dangerous aspect or them being aggressive. It's mostly, hey, you know, who doesn't want to shoot on a beautiful day, you know, some sporting event. But again, usually like Drone Services Hawaii was the only local drone seller here. They educate people before they leave the store. They show them about the FAA sites and know before you fly. And even like the DJI systems, they alert you if you're within 5-mile radius of an airport or a critical area that you're not, you know, allowed to fly. So there are warnings in place electronically as well that tells you, that gives you an alert.
But, George, yeah, thanks for checking in with us. We want to invite, we've got about 15 minutes left. We want to invite listeners to join us by calling 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about drones, their effect on people. And, you know, clearly there are responsible operators of drones like yourself, Micah, and a couple of callers that we've had. But I'm just wondering how much unregulated activity there is out there.
That's, a difficult thing to measure. Again, you asked about the numbers down at the Floating Lantern event. There was a dozen or so down there. So that's about maybe a reasonable average of what you might see. But there's no reporting mechanism. There's no way to know. It really depends on people like George to see these type of things and mm-hmm. then call attention to the operators. And, you know, in all cases, I will say, maybe in most cases, the operators simply didn't have the information or didn't think it applied to them or didn't think it applied in the circumstance, and they just have to sit back and think a little bit about the ethics, as Mike has been stressing.
I had a situation where my son mm-hmm. said he was having coffee in Kaka'ako and happened to notice a drone that was hovering by a high-rise, a residential tower, by the penthouse level. And then he said it was there for a long time, and then something happened and it crashed. And, the concern was for somebody on the ground could get cut by those blades, you know, or get hit by something. And so I called the property manager the next day when my son relayed this story. And he said, where was it? And he said, oh, there was a couple on in the penthouse that's going through a really messy divorce. And he says, I wouldn't, doubt that they have the money to buy a drone or spy on each other or something. But it was just a really interesting kind of a snapshot of what drones are being used for and the dangers if something happens and this thing falls on your head.
Something similar happened in Seattle a couple of years ago where a parade was being videoed by a drone which ran into a building and then the parts came down and hurt a couple of people. So that person, I think that's a pretty serious charge on that particular individual. And that brings up the point again. In a high rise in Honolulu, if you're on the downwind side, you're going to be in serious turbulence, especially in a strong wind. And even though these systems are reliable, as Bob was telling us, they can't necessarily handle all forms of turbulence and all forms of GPS cutout because of the signals and such being deflected by a building. So there are aspects where reliability can get reduced. And then you have a problem on your hands. And I think it's probably reasonable to say that unlike airplanes where you have maybe 30 seconds, manned airplanes like what Michael flies, you have 30 seconds to recognize something's not right and you got some time to fix it. As long as you have altitude, you're not out of altitude, you're not out of ideas, you have something you can do. In drones, you generally don't have much altitude and you don't have much of an idea of what to do. So your ability to respond to an adverse circumstance is extremely limited, and that's what your son experienced. And in fact, that then, if I can keep talking here a little bit, brings up the educational piece once again. If we can get the kids inspired to think of what's inside that drone, somebody else programmed that drone, somebody else did the math, did the software. If we can figure how to make it one step better with that next generation of kids and then a step better with the next generation, so that would be so excellent. And trusted software, trusted systems, this is what is required for a really resolute future for these systems. And I think, again, my friend Micah is on that track.
Yeah, and if I might add, also, you know, when it comes to crashes and incidents, that's another thing that in our drone programs that we always emphasize. We have a drone camp coming up at Marino School, and that's what we want to highlight is incidents. You know, when you have a crash, what do you do next? You have to understand what the next procedures that you have to go through. Even as a commercial pilot or if you're a recreational pilot, you want to make sure, you want to confirm, you know, immediately call 911 and having, you know, if someone is injured, it's a protocol that we have to follow. It's a standard that we are implementing not only in our company, but implementing without the state. I appreciate even George calling and Bob is because as a community, yeah, we need to stick together and hold that standard together for good, holding good ethics, especially when it comes to incidents where you never know. We don't have control over people when who's going to purchase what and what are they going to use it for. But we can educate the community that this can be used for good and to promote the good and what UAVs can be used in our state, especially in life-threatening situations. I mean, everybody knows a Coco Head, and it's hard to get a there's a man who – there's a lot of hikers here in Hawaii, and they climb all the way up to Coco Head, and there's a man who had a cardiac arrest, and, you know, he needed an AED. He needed an automated external defibrillator, and this is where we're thinking outside the box. When it comes to education, we're thinking, okay, if you had an AED and you had a drone.
You could deliver it.
Thank you.
With a drone.
You only have less than a minute to get this guy mm-hmm. back up. We mm-hmm. need to shock this guy's heart. And it's impossible for HFD to get up. And so giving them these tools in order to get this is the possibility of opening our, you know, broadening our horizons when it comes to drones. It's not about pictures and videos. It's about, you know, like I said, that's why we're here. Is Kanaka Mole is going to change this world with thinking about things like this that can innovate and going through schools, our OPO are the ones who are thinking way outside the box. They're the ones coming up with the solutions. Look at Marco Polo, for example. Oh, some students telling us, well, what if we had water in the drone and we could have helped put out the fire? Interesting, very interesting, and we push for that.
You learned to fly a plane in order to become a drone pilot. Would you recommend that for all drone pilots?
You know, and I started flying around Ko'olina, and I realized, man, there's a lot of drone pilots over here. I hope I don't land into it. Then, so you really, it puts a lot of things into perspective about when, just like Kapolei Middle School, we're on the downwind, aircrafts are coming downwind, and we're like, oh, this is super crucial to communicate. It's very hard to do. That's like my biggest struggle in company and anything in life. But it's important to get that message across. When you have that attitude as a pilot, you understand. You can. I encourage everyone to get into an aircraft and go up there and put yourself up in the air in a Cessna 172 and figure and realize, wow, soaring just like a bird. And then you can put perspective into drone operations.
Well, then you learn about things like wind direction, as you were just referring to, things that I suspect that a lot of novice drone pilots don't really understand what kind of impact that can have.
Yes. There's a lot of, like I said, when it comes to what we're doing with our drone educational programs and of course, preparing individuals in this certification, preparing them to not only it's a 6-week program that we have, and it's on our website, www.koleago.com, and it's a program that we're going to implement so we can make sure that each pilot here in Hawaii has the opportunity to know the rules and regulations and know and understand what are the possibilities, and inviting, especially in the community, pilots that can contribute their mana'o or their thoughts about what we can do to better our community, better our aviation industry.
There's a caller on the line, Annika from Hilo.
Hello.
Hi, Annika. You said your son has a passion for UAVs?
Yes, very much so. And aviation, all things that fly, birds. And he knows how to fly drones and planes and
how old is he?
Of different. He is now 13. Last year we had an experience in Hilo at First Friday, which is an evening thing, and he spotted a UAV in the sky above a crowd, and he tapped me. He follows the rules for the FAA, and he's well informed. And he said, Mom, they shouldn't be doing that. That's dangerous. And so I said, well, we can go and talk to a police officer. And we went and talked story with the police officer. And we asked the police officer if he knew the rules for flying. And it was also within the 5-mile radius of the airport. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't know. And so my son gave them a basic lesson and the rules for flying drones. And so then my son also spotted where they were flying from, and the police went over and informed them of the rules.
Annika, thanks very much for calling in. We've only got about a minute left in the show. We've got Ted Ralston from UH and Mike Amotis of Kolea Gold with us. And some final thoughts on this? It sounds as if we're coming down to education.
Yes, we are. And as of completing with our company, we open to the community, and I love that story. I love the fact a 13-year-old, we have a student, two students over at Kekulakai Punu Anunue, and they are, oh, watch out. These students, I mean, they could get along with over in the Big Island. It's because they're pushing so much about rules and regulations, and they understand what is safe operations. And so, yes, we are Kolea Gold. We're here in on Oahu, and you can find us more at www.koleagold.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and, of course, on Twitter, and pushing more of our summer program at Marino School. and it's an opportunity for students or OPO to get the opportunity to learn more about drone operations in our community.
Well, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of the conversation, but we do urge you to call us. We're going to take a brief pause, and we'll be right back with the program.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Chaminade University, offering a not-for-profit MBA. Program information at chaminade.edu/MBA.
I'm Robert Siegel. Coming up on the next On Point, from Mad Men to memes, the advertising industry is undergoing epic changes. Best-selling author Ken Auletta shares the inside story. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 2.
You've been listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217.
We'd like to thank our guests, Micah Motors of Kolea Gold and Ted Ralston of UH's Unmanned Aerosystems Center, along with the FAA's Ian Greger, who joined us earlier by phone from California.
And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send an email to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can listen back to today's show on the Conversation podcast on that website, hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.